listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
Welcome to the Games Galore Podcast, episode number 22. First one without Harbo. He is honeymooning. We've got Jason Floyd from RadioInfluence.com, who's already our UFC guru anyway. And we've got UFC 17 coming up Saturday at the Garden in NYC. We'll get to that later. But first, football. Jim McElwain's torturous tenure at the University of Florida is over. I was asked on radio today in Clemson my reaction, and I said utter elation. And the coaching search is on, and Jeremy Foley is not fucking running it, thank God. And I think we can put to bed the rumor that he was ever a decent AD, 1-for-4. On coaching hires. That's three complete busts in Muschamp, Zucker, and Mack. And, you know, Jason, I mean, ADs, when it comes to, I mean, he, you know, Foley made one of the greatest hires in college basketball history with Billy Donovan. And I think he hit it with Mike White as well. And he did great with other sports. But at the end of the day, bottom line is football, basketball are the money generators. I don't think any AD in America could go 1-for-3 on coaching hires and still have a job.
You go 0-for-2 on coaching hires, you're probably gone.
Sure, sure. But Foley had all this job security because of the Donovan hire, which I guess he deserved. And they do great in a bunch of other sports, but I don't really care about all that. And so anyhow, another coaching search is on, and Scott Strickland, the former AD at Mississippi State, who somehow lured Ben Howland, who had been at UCLA for a decade, taking them to 3 Final Fours, he lured him to Starkville, Mississippi. So Strickland has very good recruiting prowess when it comes to coaches. You know, I've said I think Gundy is my number one pick. Now, whether that's possible or not, I don't know. I know that he and the AD have had friction in the past. I know that he and T. Boone Pickens haven't always seen eye to eye, but they're doing great right now. And if they beat Oklahoma, which I think they will this weekend, that's completely out of the question. And that might be out of the question anyway. I love Mike Leach, but I don't think Florida would hire him. So that's probably out of the question. It sounds like from Chris Landry, what you sent me, Jason, it sounds like Mullen, Taggart, and Frost.
You got to think Scott Frost, if you're, you know, look, I'm an FSU fan, so, you know, whoever they hire, you know, I hope you get the worst coach personally. But if you're Scott, if you label Scott Frost as the guy, you got to go all in on him right now before Nebraska has a chance to hire him.
Right, absolutely. And you got to come strong because, you know, he can play it like he wants to go to Nebraska more, whether he does or not. And I would be fine with Frost. I mean, he's young. He's turned UCF around like as quick as you can turn anybody around. I mean, they were
0-12 O'Leary's last year. I'm getting their page now. I believe they went 7-6 last season.
And they're, 7-0 right now. And the favorite to obviously get to the Group 5 bowl game. And he's been recruiting in the state of Florida the last 2 years. Just looking at Phil Steele's team page, 4 very highly touted and 11 highly touted from last year's recruiting class, which is, it's rare that you see 4 very highly touted from an AAC school. So, he's got the lay of the land, and I think he'd be a great choice. I know Dino Babers, you know, isn't his, man, I just love me some Dino Babers, and I'm going to love him even more after he beats your boys on Saturday.
Hey, I'll throw a name out for you.
You
mentioned Strong. What about Charlie Strong? I mean, I'm here in Tampa. The reason he's at USF is because Texas is paying a majority of his salary. I've been telling people around here, I think he's one and done here. He's going to get one of those Big 5 schools. He's coached at Florida before. You know, and yes, he's a defensive guy, but look what he did at Louisville with Teddy Bridgewater.
No doubt. And, I mean, he's as good at recruiting South Florida as anybody out there and has been for decades. I think he's a decent, you know, plan C or D. Look, everybody in Florida loves Charlie Strong. I mean, he was defensive coordinator on two national title teams. Yeah, 06 and 08. And many SEC title teams with Spurrier. So, you know, nobody would be pissed. But I think everybody's looking for a little more splash. But, I mean, he's a solid plan D, you know. And a lot of times, hell, with all these coaching searches, I always say it's all about timing. I mean, I remember the year that North Carolina couldn't find a basketball coach. I mean, they had to settle for Matt Daugherty at Notre Dame. And, you know, that's just what happens sometimes because of timing. But, I mean, the timing for Florida is great. I mean, hell, I was saying Kevin Sumlin back in the summer would get fired after the Florida game. As it turns out, 2 weeks later, it's the Florida coach getting fired. And we've got the – but I don't want Chip Kelly. That dude, he's a weirdo. I don't like him. I think he's a better fit for UCLA. Let's see. And, you know, and the Taggart thing – I don't know that the timing's right, or that would be a good look to be one and done at Oregon, whereas the USF thing, one and done for Charlie, would be obvious, you know.
But is a guy like Willie Taggart going to make the Bull Gators happy? I just can't see Willie Taggart being the guy that's going to get all those big Bull Gator boosters excited about the program. Because, I mean, look, I was joking with a buddy of mine earlier this week who's a Gator fan. I said, hey, let's make this Florida State Florida game interesting here in a couple weeks. Just let Steve Spurrier be the head coach. Come on, we need some visor being thrown on the ground.
Sure. Spurrier had a great quote today. I saw it. I think he was on some ESPNU radio show. And he goes, well, I've been on campus all week, and I haven't seen anybody too mad at what Scott Strickland did. So, yeah, I think Gator Nation is happy that Mac's gone. Even just Randy, I mean, the whole premise of Randy Shannon, the Hurricane, you know, player, assistant, head coach there, kind of disgusts me. But just to have a little life in the press conference, I mean, I'm liking Randy Shannon just because Mac was just so boring and so dorky. Oh, God, he's gone. Thank God. All right, so let's get to some bets and ball games. We've got a bunch tonight, and I'm not really interested in them because I don't want to lay points with more than a touchdown on Navy on the road, even though Temple was really bad in the first year without Matt Rule. Not going to lay a big number with Troy, even though Idaho is coming from across the country because Troy lost outright right to South Alabama laying a big number like this a few weeks ago. Eastern Michigan's been great as an underdog, but now they're a big favorite to a Ball State team that's had so many injuries is why they've had such a shitty season. And I've just got a lot of respect for Toledo and Northern Illinois and don't want to fade either. So we move to tomorrow night's action, Marshall at FAU, which is a big game in the Conference USA standings with Lame Chapin's ball club leading that division in Conference USA. They're laying 7.5 to Marshall. Marshall's 6-2, both straight up and against the spread this year, but somehow just got its ass beat at home by FIU last week. Memphis at Tulsa, you know, I've been looking at some Memphis overs this year. I've had a couple, but this one's a little too high for me at 78.5, 79. And you can check out my preview of UCLA at Utah tomorrow night on FS1 at 9, or on Friday night, that is, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. That is up on Vegas Insider now with a bunch of nuggets on the Memphis-Tulsa game and the FAU-Marshall game. UCLA-Utah, if you like Utah -6, I think you should hammer it right now because Josh Rosen is a question mark. And I'm of the belief that the odds makers have kind of hedged this number that they have out, 6, 6.5. And when I say that, I mean that if Rosen gets downgraded to out, not only will the number move north of 7, it might move north of 10. And whereas if he's upgraded to probable, you know, it may move down close to 3 because Utah has dropped 4 in a row after a 4-0 start. In their last two games, they've been blown out. Now, UCLA has been atrocious on the road this year. 0-4, both straight up and against the spread. They've lost them all by 14. And like I said a minute ago, Mora is on the hot seat big time, and Chip Kelly might be interested in that job. And look, I was in Atlanta, a Falcons fan. When things start to go south with Mora and he gets in a bad mood, you don't want him around. He might be looking to make a move himself. All right, big one Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Clemson at NC State. Clemson 7.5. What do you think on this one, Jason? I had NC State last week and thought they were looking good at halftime. And they had won, what, 6 in a row since the South Carolina game? And they just had a really bad half of football up in South Bend in the second half last week.
Their D-line is unbelievable. There's, you know, majority of those guys are going to be playing on Sundays. And, you know, if you listen to Chris Landry here on Radio Influence, he talks about that NC State defensive line. I mean, with Clemson, it's just, you know, if they can win that battle up front, I mean, you love all their skill position players.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, Hines, the running back who had an ankle injury last week, he was upgraded to probable. That came across this morning as an alert really early, so I presume he practiced full speed yesterday. You know, I would have said this time last week that I really like NC State in this game, but that second, I mean, I know, and I know this one's at home, and that was on the road, and look, Notre Dame is fucking playing some ball, man. They really are. And they were number 3 in the college football playoff. I'm okay with Georgia being number 1 because I think the committee should grade everyone's resume as it stands now, not like I do my Vegas power rankings. I have Alabama 1, Georgia 2, but you know, the committee's job is to grade the resume, and Georgia's had a tougher schedule. Obviously, with the way Notre Dame's playing, that win at Notre Dame is huge. So I think Georgia deserves to be number 1, but Alabama's strength of schedule is about to get a big boost. Not so much LSU at home, although that won't hurt it, but at Mississippi State and at Auburn, after those games, you could see Alabama overtaking Georgia, but it won't matter because they are destined to meet in Atlanta anyway. Five Dimes released some lines for potential conference championship matchups. Alabama, you can currently bet at Five Dimes, -6.5 to Georgia. And I would make that line a little higher. Probably I'd make about 8, maybe 8.5. But, you know, Georgia, they sure did put an ass beating on the Gators last week. I know you enjoyed that, Jason. Did you watch much of that?
I did watch a little bit of it. I did get a good chuckle out of some Gator fans I follow when they got that touchdown late. We're talking about how the streak continues. I'm like, if you're down 42-7, if that's the one thing you're touting, that's usually not a good thing. And that was when you knew McElwain was just done. I mean, look, me and you have joked about over the past couple of years of how tough it is for you to watch the Gators offense. I now feel your pain watching FSU's offense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I looked at y'all's. I think your offense might be ranked worse than Florida's right now. And by the way, why is this line on FSU? FSU is getting action today. I mean, it's gone from I saw one book had it 6 earlier. I'm looking right now. There's a lot of 5.5s out there. Syracuse 3-0 against the spread on the road this year, and they were 3 tough road games, and they were in all 3 of those games, and I'm talking about to win outright. At LSU, they cut the deficit to 2 with like 5 or 6 minutes left. The Miami game, they were down 20-13 to start the fourth. They had 2 good drives and settled for field goals to make it 20-19. Then Miami scored, but Syracuse had the ball back and was driving, you know, down 8, one possession. They would have had to get the 2-point conversion. But yeah, and the other one was at NC State, and so Syracuse covered all 3 of those. Now, those were bigger underdog numbers, but at 5.5 now, or most spots, you could buy the hook to 6, which I consider 6 a key number, like 3 and 7. Others don't. I do. Anyhow, so last week I went 2-0 on Friday, but I had my first bad Saturday of the year in college. My first or my worst Saturday before last Saturday was 3-2, but I had a bloody ugly 1-4-1 last Saturday, but my record is still, and I did the under on the Tuesday night game, and I only did it, and people can call bullshit on it if they want, but everybody, all my clients saw the write-up. I did the under, but only because you can't have a team total. I wanted to just do the under team total Kent State because they had not scored more than 17 against FBS foe all year. Mm-hmm. And I said to do the under team total first half and the game for Kent State. They were both winners, but Bowling Green scored so much that the under the game was not a winner. But on my explanation, everybody that bought the pick saw that I was saying to do the team total. So anyhow, I'm still number 3 out of 37 in overall money and percentage at Vegas Insider. .com. All right, Auburn and A&M. I think Auburn's laying too much, but man, A&M's. I thought Kellen Mond was getting pretty good there about 3 weeks ago, and he has just gone shit the last couple of games. So I leaned A&M. I think it's A&M or pass, but I don't know about A&M's quarterback play right now. Other SEC games. Florida's a dog to Missouri. If you missed it, Malik Zaire has been named the starter by Randy Shannon. South Carolina at Georgia. This number is way too big. It's 24. South Carolina, 4-0-1 against the spread as an underdog this year with 4 outright wins. And the only one they did not win outright and they pushed on was at A&M, and they were up by 10 late third quarter of that game. UMass at Mississippi State. Now, UMass's quarterback, Andrew Ford, he was downgraded to doubtful earlier today, and the line moved 28 to 32. I've got no idea on UMass's backup. I was giving some thought to UMass plus 28, but I'm out on that. Now, LSU-Bama, about the most least talked about LSU-Bama game in at least a decade. Alabama, I made them 21.5. And I believe it's down to 21. No, it's 21.5 still. Total 48.5. Stanford at Washington State. And man, Khalil Tate in Arizona put an ass beating on the Cardinal last, or I'm sorry, on Mike Leach and company. And he yanked Luke Falk. How dare he yank Luke Falk? And the backup threw either 4 or 5 picks. But the key to this handicap is Bryce Love, questionable. You saw how that Stanford struggled without Bryce Love last week. They had to rally late to beat Oregon State, a terrible Oregon State team. And why is Cal only favored by 7 against Oregon State? I need to look into that one a little more. Cal is on my radar. All right, let's take a break and come back. And don't go anywhere. Games galore. 22. We've got Jason Floyd, our UFC guru, radioinfluence.com of the MMA report, running the show for Harbo, and we'll talk to UFC 217 in a bit. Don't go anywhere. Back in a few. Welcome back to Games Galore 22. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. We've got Jason Floyd of the MMA report and radioinfluence.com running the show with Harbo honeymooning. And on that note, and Jason's our UFC guru anyway, we're going to talk some UFC 217. GSP making his return. Has it been already 4 years or is it almost 4 years?
Oh, no, it's been. I mean, it was, 2011?
I was watching the Countdown show last night. And, you know, obviously you've seen the pictures many times of what he looked like after the Hendricks fight, but to like see the video of how beaten up he was by Hendricks. How in the hell did he win that fight? You didn't score that fight for GSP, did you?
No, I mean, you think about GSP, his last couple of fights, you go back even to the Carlos Condit fight, the Nick Diaz fight, and then Hendricks. So that was 2013 last time we saw GSP. I mean, I was doing a radio hit earlier today and they were kind of outlining, how do you think this fight goes? And, you know, Brian, I really don't know. I mean, you know, this as a gambler, you're trying to figure out what you know. It's the variables that you don't know. I mean, you know, whether maybe it's an injury, you know, whether a guy's going to play or not. And I don't know what to expect out of George St. Pierre. I mean, my general thought is Bisping's takedown defense is going to be good enough, but you know, who knows what we see out of George St. Pierre?
Well, I mean, I remember that I was shocked that Chael had such a difficult time taking Bisping down. I had Chael for a lot of money that night, and I thought I was going to lose that decision, and I got it, thank goodness, because that was a great post-Octagon interview. But Bisping thought he won it, and I understood why. And that was when Chael was on every steroid known to man, and he did a good job of takedown defense. Now, I'm sure most, and I would think you, would argue that GSP is a better wrestler than Chael. I think Chael's even said that, but he hadn't been in the Octagon for 4 years. I lean to Bisping, but, I mean, who knows on this? Do you – on the MMA report, you pick them regardless of whether you're recommending a wager, right?
Oh yeah, I guess I'm one of those reporters that does make picks, because, you know, as a reporter, sometimes it can be real easy just not to make picks because you can't hurt anybody's feelings. But I'm actually doing my preview podcast tomorrow morning, so I've been going back and forth on the main event. My gut says GSP, my brain says Bisping.
Right. So you're undecided. You're going to go back and forth till tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I'll probably about 5 minutes before I start recording that podcast. That's what I'll decide. But it's just one of those fights I don't know about. I don't know what, you know, for you, but for me, what's drawing me to that pay per view is actually the co-main event.
Oh yeah, You know, I love Cody. I've bet on Cody, I don't know how many fights in a row. Won all of them, obviously. Now, I think this is going to be his toughest fight, but I still like him, but the price has gotten too high. Now, there's one way you can bet it if you have an account with these props available without having to risk the minus one. It's even minus 185 at some places, but without risking that chalk, you can bet Garbrandt to win the inside the distance plus 190, and you can also bet him to win by decision plus 180, and as long as he wins, you profit there if you bet the same amount, if you're convinced he's going to win. Now, if not, you lose two bets, which basically is the same as the minus 185, though, so I don't know. I can't risk minus 185. What are your thoughts on that one?
It comes down to speed in that one. I think the fact that these guys have trained in the same gym together, which it seems like it's just exes who can't get over the fact that somebody left. And what I mean by that, it's Team Alpha Male apparently just can't go over the fact that TJ Dillashaw's left. I mean, you think about kind of the timeline of this situation where when TJ left, TJ was looked like as a villain. And then as the taping of the Ultimate Fire taking place and everything has transpired back then, the roles are reverse. You know, look, if I'm in Vegas making a play on this bet, Brian, I'm taking the 155 and TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah, I mean, Cody's too expensive. I mean, Dillashaw is more than capable of winning this fight. I think Cody's a star. I don't think anybody's going to beat him for a couple of years, but I've already been saying that a couple of years. And if anybody's going to beat him, it's TJ. And those are good odds, yeah. Cody at minus 150 or less, I would be all about it. So, Wonderboy, and, you know, I still have yet to watch, and probably never will because I heard it was so bad. I've yet to watch Wonderboy Woodley 2. And he's been out since then, right? This is his first fight coming back against Masvidal.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think one of the things is styles make fights, and I know a lot of people are going to, you know, attack Tyron Woodley for that one, but it's like, what do you want Tyron Woodley to do, just, like, get into a brawl? Like, that's not his job. His job's not to go in there and brawl with somebody and put on, you know, I mean, as a fight fan, yeah, you would love to see that kind of fight, but, you know, for Tyron Woodley, when, you know, financially, there's so much at risk if you lose the championship in terms of what you get paid, he's not going to get in that kind of fight. So, I mean, I think it'll be interesting. You know, I mean, look, you know, Wonderboy does like to be a counter striker, and, you know, Jorge's a guy that he's going to come in your face, and he's going to bring the fight to Stephen Thompson. I don't know if you saw it earlier this week. Masvidal and Bisping got into it in the hotel. And, I mean, look, you know, Masvidal is a guy that, you know, it was a lot for him to get down to 155, but now at 170, he essentially is not really cutting weight to make it. You know, I lean Steven Thompson, but don't exactly feel comfortable.
Too expensive, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it. He's at minus 185, I mean, plus 160. I mean, I think there's a couple of dogs on this fight card that are interesting to me.
I mean, Masvidal, I mean, I would like, you know, if the action went on Wonderboy Saturday and, you know, you could get Masvidal, if you could get him plus 175 or plus 180, that would probably be about my buy price, because Masvidal could definitely win this fight, no doubt about it. So, Johanna Champion, who is one of my favorites, I love how she just puts her little small one finger up in the air. Number one. But Thug Rose, I mean, I got Johanna all day, but obviously, I'm sure even inside the distance, which I don't know if she'll win inside the distance, is probably still too chalky. Let's see. Actually, no, it's plus 175 to win inside the distance for Johanna. I'm not saying she's going to finish her, but that's plus odds. What do you think? You think Rose is ready to, step her game up and be real competitive in this fight?
I think Rose has got the best shot to the division to beat her. I'm not picking Rose to win this fight. I mean, but she does some unorthodox things. I think you have really seen Joanna's game go, to another level since start training at American Top Team. This is now her, I want to say, third training camp she's been at American Top Team for. When I saw the line on this, I was surprised how big of a favorite Joanna was. I mean, I was probably thinking, 3-1, maybe 4-1. And, I'm looking at the kind of line history here. She starts off at minus 385. And then this week, it has just been going down. I mean, looking at back on Sunday, she was at minus 485, and now she's at minus 750. I guess the question's got to be is, how steep does that number get?
I would think it's topped out. I mean, if it gets much more expensive, I mean, we're talking Rousey in her prime, Anderson Silva in her prime, and John Jones before a half dozen arrests and suspensions.
did you see his Instagram post the other day where he was basically in his driveway hitting mitts?
Yeah, and he's just playing the religion card on all these tweets. Jeez,
I'm telling you, it's gonna be interesting. He has a hearing with the California Commission in December. I believe it's December 16th, as I recall. Because the fact, since that was a in competition drug test, that is actually California State Athletic Commission holds jurisdiction on that. I mean, I don't, I don't, at the end of the day, I just, when that news came out, I was just baffled. I mean, it's funny. I'm playing in a fantasy basketball league this year, Brian, and I named my team Tainted Supplement because it seems like that's what all these guys are doing. But it is interesting now see, Lyman Good has a lawsuit against nutrition companies over his failed drug tests. Tim Means has already come out, and he's not naming the companies, but he said he's got a lawsuit in the works, which I hopefully say is, if you're going to pull the tainted supplement defense, start suing these companies.
Right, but with Jones, when you've already spent 9 lives plus 5 more, I mean, tainted supplement, fuck that.
I said this after it happened on my show. I said, you can be the biggest John Jones fan. And look, I am a fan of greatness, and John Jones is greatness. I love to watch a guy like John Jones fight, or like this weekend, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, because I'm a fan of greatness. I think everyone is a fan of greatness, unless you're, if it's a team, that's your rival team. But I go, how do you give him the benefit of the doubt? Even if you were the biggest John Jones supporter, I don't know how you give him that benefit.
No, you don't. And him playing this religion card is just, it's so appalling and comical, or whichever. I mean, one or the other. because we're talking about a guy that nailed a pregnant woman and fled the scene, then remembered that there was weed and cash, and I'm going to go out on a limb, and probably some booger sugar as well. sprints back to the car with the wad of cash. And did you see the interview where he was telling, I think it was Helwani, it was somebody did a profile on him, and he was talking about how he couldn't find the pipe, and that's what he said he went back for, and he said, because it was over on the passenger side floorboard, and he literally said this was maybe a month or two before he fought Cormier, he goes, now I just keep it in my middle console.
You know, it's like when people bring up the cocaine thing with him, you know, and I'm honestly surprised he never sued the Nevada Athletic Commission on that. Cocaine is not banned out of competition. That should have never been released by the commission.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, so if you had to, I mean, I know it's hard to say, but if you had to have a prediction right now, I mean, how many years is he going to get?
Two.
That's what I think.
The only way he could get the 4-year suspension is if somehow they can prove that he knowingly took this. I mean, the thing is I remember reading up when all this happened. I mean, this isn't like it's a newer drug. This is something that like was used like in the 60s by the Russians. I mean, you know, I mean, look, it's
East Germans. I think it was.
Yeah. It's just crazy to me. I mean, and you just like.
And Chael said, that his first reaction was, oh, he tested positive for that? Well, they didn't even find the good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've said this as someone who's been covering MMA for a long time. You know, the UFC's done a lot of great stuff with USADA and helped cleaning up this sport. But ultimately, you have to clean it up at the non-UFC Bellator level. You know, the guys that are working their way up. I mean, look, I live here in Florida. And the state bylaws with the state Florida State Boxing Commission only say that drug testing has to happen for a title fight. And I mean, I think we've now had two fighters come into the UFC. I think they're both international guys who failed their first drug test, you know, and ultimately that's it. To clean up MMA, you got to start on the quote unquote regional scene.
So Bellator tests for, you said just championship fights?
No, that's the Florida State Boxing Commission. It's in their bylaws. There is drug testing that takes place in Bellator. Actually, their last event, the one with Musasi and Shemenko both got drug tested out of competition, which I know there's allegedly in Musasi's contract, it basically states that there has to be drug testing for his fights, which, I mean, how many fighters go out of their way and say, hey, you know, I want this in my contract, but USADA has definitely changed the sport. There's no question about it.
No, no doubt. And for the good, no question. All right. So I'll give my picks here. I like Mickey Gall against Randy Brown. Mickey's undefeated. I think he's a freaking savage. He's minus 120. I like Mickey, and I like James Vick as an underdog against Joe Duffy. Vick is around +135-ish. I see Bovada's at +160. So if you have a Bovada account and you want to bet Vic, that's where you want to go. And, you know, there's some other pretty interesting fights. I mean, you got Hendricks. Will he make weight, even in middleweight? OSP's on short notice against Anderson, right?
Correct, yeah. He took that fight on about 2-3 weeks' notice.
Yeah, and OSP is still a minus 170 favorite. And I know Curtis Blaydes is nasty, but that Alexei Oleinik guy, him and his Ezekiel chokes, I had him last fight, let's see, it was like, here, I'm going to click it right here, it was against, am I mixing him up with somebody else? It only has one previous fight on his odds page. I don't know, I'll have to check that out, but anyway.
I don't know if Curtis Blaydes should be, nearly a 4-1 favorite in that fight.
Right, right. So my point was I'm giving Oleinik a little bit of thought. If Masvidal would get up to +180, I would do that. I really love for the action to come back in on Dillashaw and Cody to go back down to -150. Then I jump on Cody. But right now I'm on Vic and Mickey Gall, and that's about it. All right, back to... Oh, wait, well, I wanted to ask you about this because Harbo and I talked about it a couple weeks ago. What do you think about Frankie and Holloway?
C- can Max stop the takedown? I mean, if the fight plays out on the feet, you love Holloway in that fight. But, you know, it's, you know, we've seen Frankie in these positions where he's fighting a striker. I mean, the Cub Swanson fight comes to mind. You know, the one that really he struggled with was Jose Aldo, not being able to get Aldo on the ground. I mean, that's a great fight. I mean, that's a great pay-per-view, too. I mean, it's great to see, you know, I've joked about, you know, UFC needs to make pay-per-views great again. It looks like they're finally doing that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I love that card. And Harbo and I talked about it a few weeks ago. We went through all of Holloway's opponents his whole career, and he's never faced a wrestler of Edgar's ilk by any, not even close. We've got odds for Connor and Ferguson, and I thought it was a good number. Minus 165, Ferguson plus 135. I give Ferguson a good shot in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, his jiu-jitsu is just sick. I mean, just absolutely sick. I mean, that's a fight that we hope we see happens at some point.
Right, I saw Connor's quotes today. That was pretty good stuff. Did you see his quotes today?
I saw it. I mean, look, at the end of the day, and I said this on the show I was on earlier, it's the UFC needs Conor McGregor more than Conor McGregor needs the UFC.
No doubt, and he said it's in negotiation. He said, he goes, but I want to be a promoter and an owner now.
You know what? I think whenever, if Conor McGregor ever fights in the UFC again, I think it's a co-promotion event.
Wow.
I mean, look, the days of paying Conor McGregor $10, $20 million, those days are over. Right. You got to give him some type of reason to sit there and want to fight. I mean, it's, look, he's the biggest draw in MMA. There's no one even close. I don't even know. I mean, when it comes to active fighters, I don't even know who the number two star in MMA is right now.
That is a great question. I think if Cody puts on a big time performance, he'll have a case for number two. All right, some quick notes. Deshaun Watson has been downgraded to questionable for the Texans this week.
Have you seen the report?
No, I haven't.
It came up here. Supposedly he tore his ACL in practice, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport and a follow report by Adam Schefter.
Oh, okay. Now I see he's out for the season.
Oh, that's awful.
Oh, that's horrible.
You want to talk about, you know, Dabo Sweeney? You remember? I mean, he talked about if you pass on Deshaun Watson, you're passing on the Michael Jordan. Dabo looks pretty brilliant at this point.
19-8 TDI and T ratio for a rookie is pretty good.
And I picked him up in fantasy football. He was scoring me a ton of points.
And you know what the side story on this is? Well, obviously Andrew Luck, I mean, no shocker, he was ruled out for the season. They put him on IR earlier today. But you know what this does? This makes it a very real possibility that the Jacksonville Jagoffs are going to win that division and go to the playoffs this year. A very real possibility. Wow.
Look at that defensive line. I mean, that defensive line, I mean, I saw the number of sacks they have this year. I will tell you, you know, I work for the Bucks Radio Network, and we went up there for a couple of days to practice them in the preseason, and I did not see this coming.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. And look, Bortles is going to still lose them plenty of games, but you might only need to go 8-8 to win this division. 9-7 is the winner, I think. I would think 1-9 is going to win this. Wow, that sucks.
I mean, who's a backup in Houston?
Savage. Tom Savage. He's awful. Hell, yeah, he's not that good at Pitt. He was not very good at Pitt. All right, my power rank. We'll get back to some NFL because we need to talk more NFL, and Jason being in here can help us do that. All right, my power rankings this week. Bama 1, Georgia 2, Ohio State 3. Oscar Wiener pulled a freaking comeback out of his ass last week. Penn State 4, Clemson 5, Wisconsin 6, Oklahoma 7, Oklahoma State 8, Notre Dame 9, TCU 10, Auburn 11, Washington 12, Virginia Tech 13. This is as high as I've gotten Miami in my power rankings all year. They're up to 14. only by attrition, pretty much. 15 Mississippi State and Matt. Oh, I didn't mention Matt Campbell. I'd be okay with him to Florida, for sure. I mean, I loved him at Toledo, and he has Iowa State rolling in his second year. They're 16, Stanford 17, but they better get Bryce Love healthy, or they're going to lose in Pullman. LSU 18, USC 19. USC better watch out for Khalil fucking Tate. My God, is that kid. Here, I got the numbers right here. Khalil Tate, since being put in the starting lineup, Arizona's 4-0. Straight up and against the spread. No, I'm sorry. They did not cover against Cal. 3-1 against the spread. He has passed for 784 yards, a 6-3 TDINT ratio, but it's 6-2 in those four starts. 926 rushing yards, 8 touchdowns. He averages 13.4 yards per carry. I've never even heard of that. I mean, it's only 69 carries, but that's quite a few carries to have that yards per carry average. And their combined points, if you want to look at the over, which is 73, the highest USC has had this year, the combined points since Tate was in the line has gotten in the lineup for Arizona, 87, 77, 89, and 95. Now, a caveat, with that 89, only 62 were in regulation against Cal. Where was I? Okay, yeah, 20 Arizona, 21 NC State, 22 UCF, 23 Memphis, 24 Wazoo, and 25 West Virginia, which was my big play last week, and Will Grier really let me down big time. Next five, Texas, Michigan, South Carolina, USF, and Georgia Tech, and Ellinger has been upgraded to probable for Texas, and remember, Tom Herman's career as a head coach, 8-0 against the spread as an underdog, 5 outright wins, and the Longhorns are catching, I believe 6.5 was the last I saw, at TCU, which is obviously coming off the loss to Iowa State. No sign of the semis or the mighties. My power rankings this week, Jason.
Really? There is none? I will tell you this. I don't know if you looked ahead to next week's college schedule. It's going to be a good weekend.
What, does FSU have an open date?
No, we play Clemson. That'll be another loss. But you got Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, Mississippi State, Notre Dame, Miami, TCU, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State, Iowa State.
I give Mississippi State a chance there. Only because of Nick Fitzgerald and the way that he can, the way that he's so elusive. Now he's far from a polished passer. I just give them just a little, small, little window of maybe, because Todd Grantham will have a good defensive plan. All right, let's see. Oh, Penn State at Michigan State. Penn State's in trouble, man. They're in real trouble because they're, you look at their schedule, and there just aren't really any resume-building wins left. And unless Ohio State falters twice, which, well, at Iowa and at Michigan, I guess anything's possible. But, I mean, Penn State, they've got Rutgers, Maryland, and Nebraska left after Michigan State. So what were they in the playoff rankings this week? Let me look.
Ohio State was, what, 4? Wasn't Penn State 6?
I'm looking right here. Penn State 7. So they're going to have a hard time. I mean, a lot of people in front of them got to lose. I mean, which could happen. Yeah, I mean, it's, Oklahoma is in front of them. They could lose Saturday. Ohio State could lose at Michigan or in the Big Ten title game. But now then, would they get in ahead of Penn State with 2 losses but a head-to-head?
See, here's the question, Brian. Aren't we just talking about which other two teams are getting in the playoff besides Alabama and Georgia? Because if they both walk into Atlanta undefeated, there's no way that loser cannot be in the Final Four.
I agree. And if it's if that happens and Notre Dame if Notre Dame wins out, they're in easily because they're tough down the stretch. So that means you're going to have multiple Power Five champions not in, or that means you're going to have three Power Five champions not in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Did you see the – I know you're in Vegas. I don't know if you saw the piece that ESPN did on Brian Kelly last week where he talked about basically he realized after the way last season unfolded that he needed to figure out what was going wrong. And he met with each player individually, and basically they kind of told him, like, hey, we just don't feel like you're in it with us. And they talked about during the offseason he was there every morning at 5 a.m. to go through the lift with the players, and, you know, it just – it just kind of shows. I mean, as a you know, these college coaches, they've got to know their players. I mean, look, I look at FSU playing, and I can't help but sit here and say that that team has quit on those coaches.
And on that note, let me give the quote from my source about the FSU game. Let's see here.
Brian, okay. I'm not ashamed to admit this. I turned the game off in the fourth quarter last Friday night. I it was one of those things, like, you know, I think I even put it on my Facebook, you know, two plays in this game, I guess it's going to be a long night. And even like in the third quarter, I'm like, okay, you know what? Jimbo makes some changes. Boom, you get a score real quick. You can get back in this game. And then it just, it was 35-3 at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And I just said, you know what? No, I'm done torturing myself.
Well, my story with the game is, I missed my flight early Friday morning, so I got rescheduled in the afternoon. So when I had my connector from Atlanta to Vegas, the game was just starting. And, you know, I had a TV in my seat, and so obviously I'm wanting to watch the game. And ESPN, it said out of service. ESPN2? Worked perfectly fine. I think I was watching SMU and Tulsa, but I was only, you know, on the ticker, I could see an FSU score every like 7 or 8 minutes, but every now and then I would miss it. I was kind of dozing in and out. And so you can imagine the happiness when I landed and saw that final score.
This is a problem. I think I'm, myself and all FSU fans have. I think we look at Jimbo Fisherman. Look, Jimbo is a great coach. There's no question about it. But I think there's a question of, has he evolved to the run pass option in college football? I mean, you know, whether you love or hate Nick Saban, Nick Saban has, you know, made sure that he's putting his team in the right position to win every week. And, you know, you just can't go up to the line of scrimmage, be set in your formation, and run a play and think that it's always going to succeed. You gotta shift, you gotta motion, you try to fake out these defenses. If you just sit there and line up, you're not going to succeed.
Okay, this is a well placed source who used to be involved in the FSU program and still has a lot of contacts over there. He texted me earlier. Two coaches walked out of practice last week. One coach flew commercial flight home after BC game. There was another blow up in the locker room between assistant coaches. Rumor is Jimbo has brought in a quote-unquote defensive consultant, whatever the hell that is. So that gets back to what you were telling me more than a month ago, Jason, about how that locker room was toxic in Tallahassee.
Charles Kelly's gone, first off. I mean, it's just you. I mean, how bad last year, you know, went, especially early on, and now this year. I mean, I kind of correlate, you know, I don't try to put everything on Charles Kelly, because I think, you know, we praise coaches too much when things are going well, and we put too much blame on them when things are going bad, kind of like quarterbacks. You know, they always get all the praise, but also you also come down the hardest. And I think Florida State and Florida, I kind of had the same problem where their offenses are not able to sustain drives. And by the time you hit the third and fourth quarter, your defenses are wear out. I mean, go back to the Super Bowl last year. You know, I think if you look at the amount of plays that the Atlanta Falcons were on the field, that's ultimately why they lost that game. It was, if you're letting the other team have 90 plays, you're not going to win.
Yeah. Yep, 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 yep. I don't want to go back to that Super Bowl game. Yep.
Is that worse than you know, most of my Gator friends, they always bring up Tommy Frazier. They hate hearing that name.
Yeah, Tommy Frazier's still running. You know, my pro doesn't touch the passion for the Gators. It's not even in the anywhere close. But I do love my Falcons, and I drove to Houston, and yeah, that drive home sucked.
Oh, yeah, that's a long drive.
It was brutal. All right, let's take a last break. We're going to come back. We're going to hit on some NFL, a couple of college games, and wrap up GG22. Thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Game Floor 22 podcast. I'm your host, Brian Edwards, Jason Floyd, in for the honeymooning Harbo. A couple more college games to touch on before we get into some NFL. So Iowa State at West Virginia. Gosh, I really loved West Virginia last week. Did not work out, obviously. Oklahoma State played great, and Will Grier played his worst game of the year. And the Pokies won 50-39 in Morgantown. And, you know, West Virginia is laying only 2.5 to Iowa State. That's a tricky game. You know, West Virginia's burned me 2 weeks in a row, so I'm going to stay away. But I would lean West Virginia there. Vatek -2.5 at Miami. I lean Vatek there, but it's not going to make the cut. Man, Virginia's really gone in the dumps after that 5-1 start. Georgia Tech's laying 10. Georgia Tech got a backdoor push for me against Clemson at +14. I actually, for real money, I'd actually gotten a good number at 14.5 earlier in the week, but on my records page on VI, I did not. Colorado at Arizona State. Boy, Arizona State had been hot, but not last week. They got smashed. And I don't know what happened to my boys from App State last week. Now, I would have lost anyway on my VI records page, but for real money, I had it bought down to -3, and they had a 3-point lead, and they were on UMass's, like, 21 with, like, a minute 15 left. I couldn't even find a website that would give me the play-by-play to see what UMass did to, I guess App State must have missed a field goal or on downs, and UMass rallied to force overtime and then won in overtime. App State's lost two heartbreakers this year, the one to Wake Forest and then that one to UMass. Man, Southern Miss. Gosh, I'm tempted to take them +6.5 at Tennessee, and more controversy in Knoxville as Butch Jones is being accused of playing a concussed player. I believe it was Brett Kendrick, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so I would be all about Southern Miss. They had won 3 in a row, both straight up and against the spread. But then at home last week, as an 11.5-point favorite, they lose 30-12 to UAB. So that scares me, but I would lean to Southern Miss. You know, Tennessee is, if there's ever been a fade train team, it's them. They actually covered last week against Kentucky, though. So that was in the dog roll. However, they are favored this week. Like I said, I think Oklahoma State wins this week, but I bet Oklahoma State +3 in the games of the year this summer, and I also have them in a +350 to win the Big 12. So I like my positions there. No reason for me to press it -2.5, although in my contest where I pick 25 games, I do have the Pokies. Big injuries in the Wake Forest at Notre Dame game. In fact, let me go to my preview to tell you about these injuries, because Wake Forest redshirt freshman Greg Dortch season-ending injury last week, and he was having an all-ACC type of year. Let's see here. Okay, so Dortch, 53 catches, 722 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Redshirt freshman, but he's out for the year for Wake, so that's a huge loss. They're starting running back Carney. He is out, as is their leading tackler, strong safety Jesse Bates, with a team-high 64 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss. So those are three starters and two really, really important players for Wake that will not be in the lineup, plus 14 at Notre Dame. So, Jason, did you know there's only one team in America that has not covered the spread this year? Do you know who it is?
No idea. Who is it?
That would be the Seminoles. 0-5-2 against the spread. You got the two pushes at Wake and at Duke.
Yeah, that's if you're looking to make a wager in that game, I think either you play Syracuse or you pass.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, look, this is coming from a Seminole fan. I don't know how you would trust Florida State to win by a touchdown.
Well, let's see. Okay. You had the reigning Heisman winner, Lamar Jackson. The record was 2-3. It was a noon game. This is a noon game also, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you can pretty much expect that FSU is going to have a bunch of noon games the rest of the year.
That's like the whole Ron Zook era. So there were thousands of empty seats with the reigning Heisman winner and a 2-3 record. Now there's 2-5 record. And so I'm thinking smallest crowd at Doak Campbell in a decade or three. I mean, tens of thousands of empty seats, don't you think?
Oh, no question. I mean, I think it's actually Parents Weekend, so I'm sure they'll still have a decent crowd in there. But, yeah, I mean, you look at – you've got that – I mean, the Delaware State game, I mean, it's going to be just empty. You know, and, you know, if somehow they can get to 5 wins after, you know, we beat those Gators, I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden they magically pay Louisiana Monroe $1 million to make up that game December 2nd.
Well, you've told me about that, and then I finally saw a report about that today, and I'm pulling it up. Oh, whoa! As I looked, I just saw something different. Could Jim McElwain return to Alabama? We'll do everything we can to help him, says Nick Saban. Hey, have at him, Saves. Take him.
What about Oregon State?
Huh?
McElwain to Oregon State?
That's what I was hoping for a few weeks ago. We shall see. Oh, yeah, so here it is. Decision on rescheduling FSU-ULM coming next week. So I guess that means if FSU beats Syracuse, if FSU loses, then it's null and void.
Well, I mean, look, if you're, you know, and I know a lot of people, you know, may, you know, from the outside looking in going, man, why are you going to play, you know, a game to get the 6 wins? It's not about going to the bowl game. It's about getting those, I believe it's 13 additional practices that the coaches can have. I mean, that's why these coaches want to go to a bowl game. It's not about, you know, hey, let's go have a vacation. It's about getting those extra practices.
Now, you know how last year it was Mississippi State, you know, if you didn't have an amount of qualifiers for bowls. I think Nebraska maybe also, or maybe that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, Nebraska 1 year definitely.
5-7, but they had enough of a grade point average or whatever. I wonder if FSU's got enough of the grade point average, what's called APR.
I mean, I guess the question's got to be, is if you're a bowl that is looking at potentially bringing FSU in, I mean, obviously the reason you're going to bring them in is you think that the FSU fan base is going to travel. But I guess it all depends on location. I mean, maybe if you're one of these Florida lower tier bowls, maybe you look at bringing FSU because then you think that, you know, if FSU fan just has to get in a car, they're going to come.
Yeah, I don't know many of my FSU friends that will be making a trip to a bowl game, a pre-Christmas bowl game, unless it's in their hometown.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was looking at it, and I'm like, ugh. You know, because, I mean, look, it's not cheap to go to these bowl games.
Oh, hell no. No, not at all. Not at all. Okay, let's get some NFL, and Jason works for the Bucks. He'll be in New Orleans this weekend, and the Bucks are catching 7, and the Saints are absolutely on fire with 5 consecutive wins. They did not cover the spread against Chicago by the hook last week, but they had covered the 4 previous. What you thinking on this one, Jason?
I mean, look, I think it's you look at the health of the Buccaneers is one thing you have to look at. I mean, I always say is you have to look at, you know, Brent Grimes, who didn't play last week. This is a rivalry game. The Saints have, it's always, you know, it's, you know, you're going to have to stop the passing game with Drew Brees. And, you know, we'll see what the injury report looks like come Friday when we really have, you know, more of a situation, you know, just looking at the injury report. There's actually only 3 Saints on the injury report right now. But the Buccaneers do have a bunch of guys on there. Pretty much the only person that did not participate here on Thursday was Brent Grimes, which obviously is the big guy that to be paying attention to. I think ultimately this game, it comes down to the trenches between the offense and defensive line. The Buccaneers obviously have a ton of weapons, you know, and if this offense gets rolling, I mean, they can put up a ton of points.
The Falcons and the Panthers, I tell you what, the loser of this game is in big trouble and is certainly a big fan of the Bucs beating New Orleans.
I tell you, man, I don't know about you, man. I was pretty shocked to see the Panthers trade Kelvin Benjamin.
What the hell was that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder what's going on there because, I mean, obviously I saw the Panthers last week. They didn't do a lot on offense. And, you look at their wide receiver core and there's got to be more to that story of why they decided that they didn't want to be in the Kelvin Benjamin business anymore.
What did they get back for it? A third?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a conditional draft pick. I mean, I tell you what, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen as an active NFL trading deadline as we saw this week.
No doubt. I was thinking the exact same thing, and too bad for the Texans with this Watson news.
I tell you what, you know who the biggest loser of the trading deadline was?
Oh, the Browns.
No. Kirk Cousins. Because now the 49ers are not in the business of trying to get a quarterback.
Right. I tell you what, Cousins played bad last week, and he's been playing very well. He did. I watched most of that Cowboys game, and especially in the second half, he played awful. So the Falcons are now favorites. We were dogs this morning. Now the Falcons are 1.5-point favorites at Carolina. The loser's in trouble. The loser is in big trouble. I mean, if the Bucs win, then you still got a pretty balanced 3-team race. But in the NFC South, obviously.
Well, the thing I told people heading into last week was, you know, because last week was the Bucs' first divisional game, and You know, they still have all these divisional games left. So, I mean, it's still up there for the taking. I mean, it's, you know.
Yes.
You know, I mean, look, it's, I mean, when you have these divisional games, essentially they're 1.5 games when you really think about it.
And, I haven't watched a ton of Dolphins. Was Ajayi not having a very good year? Because he was really good last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, no. The only reason I know about that is just because Ajayi's on my fantasy team. Had not been performing well. That was another trade that shocked me. Makes you wonder how much of that is just cleaning house down in Miami. I mean, I don't know if you saw that press conference. What was it? Was it last week with Adam Gase where, I mean, just went off. And it was just kind of surprising to see a coach do that. But yeah, it makes you wonder what's going on in Miami because, I mean, they've, you know, overall, it's not been an awful year for them.
They're 4-3. They're still in the wild card race. I mean, obviously, the way they've played the last few weeks, they don't look like a playoff team. But now it's going to be the Titans and the Jaguars in the AFC South race. The Jags, oh my gosh, the Jags are 5.5 to the Bengals. I'm all about some Bengals this week. Look, the D-line for the Jags is amazing. The whole D is really, really good. But Blake Bortles is still going to throw. He's still going to throw 2 or 3 picks every other week. I mean, in a one game sample, he'll throw 2 or 3 picks. Fournette is probable. Marquise Lee is questionable for the Jags. The Bengals, they've got some key players questionable. Wide receiver Brandon LaFell, defensive end Michael Johnson. I'll still be on the Bengals this week. God, the Giants are bad. The 1-6 G-men hosting. Is that the Rams or the Chargers? That's the Rams. And wow, what a story the Rams are. They're -3.5 at the G-men. Philly is having a hell of a year. They are 7.5 at home against Denver. And Denver is really struggling. I don't do many teasers these days, but if you like teasers, Philly's a great tease team this week, in my opinion.
Ooh, man, they're going all in.
Yeah. They got a Jai. Did they trade for anybody
else?
Yeah,
they got Jai. And you know, they were trying to, I think I saw something, they were trying to get a left tackle as well because of an injury situation there. But, I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, at this point in the season, you talk about surprises. I mean, Philly at 7-1. I mean, the Rams got to be the biggest surprise at 5-2.
No doubt. No question about it. That coach is doing a hell of a job. And
oh, he's only, what, 34 years old?
He's young.
Yeah, he's younger than me.
Right. Oh, he's much younger than me. okay. Washington at Seattle. Seattle is 7. Total of 45. Boy, that was a hell of a game between Seattle and Houston last week. That was a fun one. And Watson was freaking terrific, except for a play or two. Boy, Tennessee, they need to get a win against Baltimore as they're tied with the Jags at 4-3 apiece. The Ravens at 4-4. Is Flacco back this week?
Flacco played last week. Well, that was the Dolphins game where you got nailed by Alonzo.
Gotcha. Yep. Listed as probable. Arizona, San Fran, scrub game. Man, why did I'm wanting to call him Schottenheimer, but it's not my boy Shoddy. It's Shanahan.
Yeah.
Why did he go take this dog shit job? Because Sarkisian is the Falcons' problem, and I thought it was a horrible hire by Dan Quinn, and I think he might fire him if we have another bad offensive game. But I wish Shanahan. I mean, the Falcons miss him. I can't ever remember a time where an NFL team missed an offensive or a defensive coordinator so bad, and it was so evident. But that's the case for the Falcons this year for sure. All right, KC at Dallas. Wow, that's a big game for both teams. Pick 'em, total 51. And the Raiders, -3 down in South Florida. And Detroit at Green Bay. Man, Detroit, I had Pittsburgh big late Sunday night. And wow, did I get fortunate. What did Detroit had 3 trips in the red zone in the late third and the fourth and came away with 3 points total. Pittsburgh really tightened up in the red zone. Big Ben made a big play with that pass, about an 80-plus yarder, and the Steelers won and covered. Detroit is at Green Bay. Detroit -2.5, and we will see what Brett Hundley can do this week. Did they rule A-Rod definitely out for the season?
No, they've not ruled him out. There's a potential chance for him to return. You know, I think they put him on the designated to return list.
Okay, this is my biggest beef for the NFL these days. So, or at least when I go to the injury reports, like right now it says Aaron Rodgers, IR. Okay, IR used to mean you're done for the year, but now they have like 2 separate IRs.
Yeah, correct.
But don't designate the separation between the two on all these injury reports. So I never know.
Yeah, it's like I want to say Danny Woodhead, the Ravens, had put him on that list, and he just returned to practice. I think it's one of those. I think the rule is basically, you know, once they return to practice, you have X amount of time to basically make them active. It's kind of like when a guy goes on PUP, you know, during training camp, like, you know, you have, I think it's like 21 days to put there. I mean, I'm trying to think of, there's another player. Oh, Teddy Bridgewater's right now in that window of when he come back. And I'm sure, you know, now it looks like Josh Gordon's back for the, he's been, I guess, reinstated. So he's back with the Browns. So we'll see when, you know, if he gets back on the field.
Did you watch that that like documentary type video on Josh Gordon?
I did not.
Man, it was really good. And if you watch it, man, you'll be rooting for him. It was about a 10 to 12 minute video.
Okay.
That who was he training with? A former Olympic U.S. Olympic medalist in track and field. I forget his name, but it's a comment. I mean, if somebody said it, I would say it was him. But anyhow, he was working out with him. He had gotten like a 72-hour break from rehab. And man, it was – and he was talking about all kind of – man, I'm really rooting for Josh Gordon now. And, man, if he can stay sober, he's gonna light the league up like he was doing because he is sober. I mean, he was lighting the league up when he was still partying.
Who's going to get the ball to him?
I mean, it makes me think of John Jones again. I mean, he's done everything he's done while partying. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right.
It's Brian, it's always interesting when I talk to, you know, active fighters about John Jones, and that's the thing they all kind of say is like he's the greatest in the world and he's a partier.
Right. Can you imagine if he quit partying?
Yeah, I mean could you imagine if he was in the gym three times a day, you know, majority of the year? I mean, the guy's, it's just, you know, and you know, who knows if we ever see him back. I mean, yeah.
And like you were saying about him earlier, you were saying, you know, whether you like him or not, if you like greatness, and I love greatness, but that's what makes me just freaking hate this guy even more, is that he is so great, and yet, and look, I'm fine with him partying. I throw no stones. I'm still recovering from Vegas, and it's freaking Thursday. But... you know, this guy can't even just slow down enough to even be eligible to freaking get in the octagon. It's nuts, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, look, you see this in sports where, you know, it's, a great player. I mean, and it's like you said, whether you love or hate. I mean, look, I hated Tim Tebow when he played against the Florida State Seminoles, but you recognize just how great of a college football player he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he made Urban Meyer a lot of money.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
God, I mean that's. I mean, look. You look at a lot of successful college coaches. I mean, look. How much money did Jameis Winston make? Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah,
I think I saw the stat. Since Jameis left FSU, Jimbo's lost like 14 or 15 games, and Jameis is only in his third year in the NFL.
Right. Well, here we can always look that up. Sounds like a tasty stat for me to investigate.
Yeah, that does sound like a stat that you would like.
Well, let's see. Now you went, 20-6 the last 2 years, but
you've already got 5 losses this year,
right? So that's 11, and you only have 22-11 since he left. But wait, now what we could do if we want to doctor this stat, Butch Jones style, we doctor this stat and eliminate the first 6 wins of 2015, and you go from 22-11 to 16-11 your last 27.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, it's...
We totally Butch Jones that stat. I love it.
Hey, by the way, is Butch Jones getting fired or what?
What the fuck's going on up there?
I know how much you love his press conferences.
I do. God, I do. And you know what? I haven't watched these ones from yesterday when they're accusing him of playing the concussed player. I got to go do that. That's on my...
Could you imagine being a Tennessee Vols beat writer and you walk into that press conference every Monday and Tuesday?
Heaven. Absolute heaven. The butchisms that have come out. What was his... He had another new one. A character rep. No, a leadership rep. You don't have to get a physical rep to get a rep. You can get a mental rep and a leadership rep.
It's just crazy to me. I mean, look, I'm a college football nut.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have... Could we have up to like four or five vacancies in the SEC?
Well, I was saying like week three or week four that that only four coaches in the SEC could feel safe, and one of them was Mullen, and I said, and Mullen might be on multiple SEC teams' radar, and the other one was Derek Mason and Vandy.
Yeah,
and the only other two were Saban and. I think it was Mark Stoops, because at the time, you know, it was Kirby Smart. Okay, maybe it was six guys that could feel comfortable. Smart, Muschamp, Saban, Stoops, Mullen, and Mason. And I said there's 10 guys that are kind of on shaky ground, and here, I'll just give them to you now. Malzahn, Orgeron. I think Orgeron's safe now. For this year,
he is because of his buyout.
Yeah, he could easily get fired next year.
Is it like $12 million?
I think it is. Oh, and I don't know what I was going to say. The reason they haven't fired Butch is apparently they've got Jimmy Sexton trying to find him a landing spot where the buyout can be reduced. But if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm like, fuck all those semantics. I don't want that guy wearing my logo for another minute. And that's where I was on McElwain, and that's why I love my new AD. And fucking Jeremy Foley. 1-for-4 on football hires. That is just incredible. And what if Urban would have said no and went to Notre Dame? He might have gone 0-for-4.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you know that guy's not going to be your coach, you might as well just get rid of him and get the start for your search going. I don't know what Tennessee does. You know, maybe it's David Cutcliffe, but...
Well,
do you want a younger guy in there?
I had Tony Basilio on a few weeks ago, and he said there's a good chance Peyton could be the point man on this, and if so, you would like Cutcliffe's chances. Now he's getting up there, but I think the timing is right for him to leave Duke. Whereas I don't remember if it was when they hired Dooley or Butch, they were interested in Cutcliffe and
I think it was Dooley.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, because that would be when it was only like his second or third year at Duke, and the timing wasn't right, and they wanted to interview him. And Tony told me that Cutcliffe did what Spurrier did. You know, after a while, when Spurrier was at Florida, when the NFL would come calling, they would be like, yeah, we'd like to do an interview. And he'd be like, uh-uh, I don't do interviews. You want to offer me a job? You can come make me an offer. I don't do interviews, period. I love it.
I just want to see Spurrier become a media guy.
Oh, God.
Could you imagine like putting him on College Game Day and just the one-liners he would start throwing out there?
Well, remember they had him as the guest picker. Like maybe like a month after he resigned that season.
Which that's right, yeah.
They had him as the guest picker, and he was pretty funny.
No, I don't know if you ever read the articles they used to do. I think it was on every day should be Saturday, what it was called. And they did a column said "Hating Ass Spurrier," which was just nothing but one line made up Spurrier quotes. It was the best thing. I mean, it was just comical. I mean, yeah, that's what we need in college football. We need kind of that jokester.
Look at this. I'm looking at my live odds feed, and just about everybody's got FSU up to 6.
Oh, man.
God, I hate that I betted it 4 earlier this week.
I don't know. It's I don't know how you trust FSU. you know, I mean, look, I mean, look, the offensive line is shaky. I mean, they've got good running backs.
This Syracuse team is good,
but they can't protect it. You know, they can't protect the quarterback. I mean, you know, it's to me, what's amazing about FSU is it's just shown almost out of the way how much of a one man team they were. I think it says so much about DeAndre Francois. I mean, look, I'm not the biggest DeAndre Francois fan, but I think him being out has really shown what he's really worth.
Yeah. I mean, this season doesn't quite go off the tracks like this, or maybe not at all.
No, I don't think it goes off the track. I mean, if you would have told me they would be 2-5 after 7 games, you could have got me to bet just about anything.
Well, it was kind of like Florida. You know, you get 9 suspensions, but, you know, Callaway and Scarlett are gone right then, and you guys, you know, get Francois gone, and then you have Irma, you know, y'all didn't play for 21 mm-hmm. days.
Yeah.
That just, oh, man. I mean, it was just gross. I mean, you know, it's August, and you're so fired up for the season, and then it was that Saturday, in like mid-August, and it, you know, the news breaks about those suspensions, and it's just like, Jesus, my season hasn't even started, and it's over.
It's tough to get excited to watch this. You know, for me, the Seminoles or you, the Gators on a Saturday. It's just tough because you know it's going to be frustrating.
Oh, my God. Absolute torture. I mean, I think my worst Saturday was that fucking Kentucky game. I felt like I gave birth after that game. I was so mad at Nussmeier. Oh, God.
I would say I was in Minnesota, and we found, like, we were having dinner at this sports bar. It must have been, like, the Gator Central place. And, yeah, I felt bad for all my Gator fans. I mean, how do you just let a guy uncovered on the goal line?
Right. And then also on a 4th-and-3 play at midfield with a 14-7 lead, they did it twice.
That's great. It's just crazy to me.
That's 30 plus years of a losing streak. Okay, Cal does not have any new injuries, so I will be on the Golden Bears against the Beavers. Why that line is only, I mean, I guess people are thinking Oregon State, you know, is just drastically improved. Look, Bryce Love didn't play, and they were at home, and they had their effort of the year last year. That doesn't mean that they're going to just come in to Berkeley. No. I love Cal. I love Cal. I'm on that this week. All right. That's going to just about do it. Games Galore 22 in the books. Thanks to Jason Floyd of RadioInfluence.com. Make sure you follow RadioInfluence.com on Twitter. Do the like program on Facebook. Do the same for Brian Edwards Sports. Check out my picks on BrianEdwardsSports.com this weekend. Give me a follow on Twitter at VegasBEdwards. You can go to Qualk and Kelly, the Out of Bounds show in Clemson. Listen to my interview with them from earlier today. I'm sure it's posted on their website by now. And I will be on Ringer University tomorrow with Chris Vernon breaking down the college slate. And any parting shots, Mr. Floyd?
I would just say for all your college football fans, they might want to check out Landry Football because Chris is bringing some really interesting insight into college football. He's talked about the whole what happened at Alabama with Lane Kiffin, which I kind of find very interesting, and particularly with his closeness to the LSU program kind of about he did a show a couple weeks ago where he just really went into the rise and fall of LSU football.
Yeah, and, you know, I was telling you, because you pointed it out to me a couple times, that I used to hear radio interviews with this guy like a decade ago, and I just would hang on every morsel of information he threw out. And I love his information, too, and you can get all his podcasts at RadioInfluence.com. Now, that clip you sent me yesterday, that two-minute clip?
That was from his episode Tuesday this week. He does a podcast every Tuesday and Thursday.
Okay, I like that, but the buyer's remorse thing, I didn't get that. Where do I go listen to that? Because I want to hear that quote.
Yeah, you just go to RadioInfluence.com. I'd actually heard a little bit of that last week as well. You know, I don't know if you saw this. There was a tweet from Joel Klatt of FS1 where He had a tweet just basically about kind of how everything ended at Colorado State with McElwain, and didn't sound like he went on good terms there with his assistant coaches. You know, maybe he's just a guy that's just not a Power Five conference head coach.
Yeah, there was an article in the Fort Collins paper. I read it. It might have been Clatt that retweeted it, but I want to say it was Coloradoan.com. But yeah, it was talking about how he treated all the employees like shit at Colorado State. And I retweeted it. So any of our listeners, just go look at my Twitter timeline. I want to say it was on my way back from Vegas, so like 2 or 3 days ago. Yeah, it was a very interesting article. And so what Jason had told me that Landry said, and I don't like to give Foley credit. Well, actually, no, it's not giving Foley credit. But anyway, Jason told me that Chris Landry said that Jeremy Foley had buyer's remorse on McElwain 2 weeks after the hire. But what I say is I had buyer's remorse 2 weeks before three of your football hires, Jeremy Foley. So, of course, you had fucking buyer's remorse because you made dumb fucking hires, you idiot. Okay, that's my parting shot right there. P22, Games Galore 22 in the books. Thanks to Jason Floyd. Follow him and myself on Twitter. Have a great weekend. Good luck on all your bets. Appreciate it, Jason. Over and out.